Welcome to Catholic Messenger Conversations Podcast. Today, Father Ross Epping, St. Ambrose University Chaplain, will talk with me, Barbara Lynn Fay, about his ministry to students, faculty, and staff on campus. Father Ross is a St. Ambrose University alumnus, class of 2011, right?
Correct.
Okay. Whose involvement in campus ministry, particularly with Father Chuck Adam and Sister Rita Cameron, inspired him to discern a vocation to the priesthood. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Awesome. So, Father Ross, I'm just going to start shooting the questions.
Please,
is that
by
okay?
All means.
Okay, so you became chaplain at a really challenging time, it seems to me, in the midst of a pandemic. So how has that experience shaped your ministry and your interactions with the students, faculty, and staff?
Here on campus, we've only just really begun to, this semester, we've begun to relax our mandates. We had a mask mandate in public.
So students didn't even know what you look like, did they?
Yeah. I celebrated Mass without my mask on, so,
oh, okay. So
they were pretty familiar. But I think we're still trying to figure it out. I am certainly trying to figure it out still. Being a pastor, I was a pastor at the time that the pandemic hit.
Oh, that's right.
And I was not... I wasn't anywhere close to here, 2.5 hours away in Grinnell. And since then, the pandemic has continued. We haven't really had like a nice, substantial ease away from it.
Yeah.
I think last year there was some like sparkle of hope.
Yeah.
And then it was robbed pretty darn quickly. And so I certainly have not had good, healthy, ample time to reflect on just how great of an impact the pandemic has had on me, like personally and spiritually. But it certainly has. It certainly has impacted and affected each of us.
Oh, yeah.
In huge ways. And whether we see those ways or not, I think right now, today, we are all just simply rejoicing in the fact that we can enjoy each other's company and see each other for who we are and what we look like, and not have that sort of creeping, scary burden of the pandemic always, always right behind our backs.
So it's a simple thing you appreciate, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, not having to wear a mask.
Yeah, not having to wear a mask and just simply lounging in one of the lounges in the lower chapel and just hanging out with students and not having to worry about putting a mask on or making sure a mask is on and not having to worry about the length of time that we spend together.
Oh, yeah.
It's just we're able to breathe easier. And just relax a little bit better into each other's company.
Oh, that's great. So it allows for better encounters.
Yeah, much better, or much easier, a much easier pathway to building relationships. There's no longer just the barriers, which, listen, I totally respect and understand, why we have to take those measures, right? To protect each other. And ourselves and our loved ones. But now that we're on the other side of it, my prayer is, you certainly begin to realize those aspects of life that you so sorely missed.
Right.
Before the pandemic, or took for granted, maybe.
So what matters most to the students today who are involved in campus ministry, and how does that compare with your experience as a student on campus? It's not been that long ago, but...
It's a good question, though, because it has... I graduated in 2011, so it hasn't been that long.
Yeah.
And yet the entire face of the generation has changed, right? So when I was a student, we lived and learned and encountered each other in vastly different ways than the students do today.
Really? Can you give me an example?
Social media, right? So, I was, when I was a student, like instant messenger, like AIM was still a thing. And Facebook was probably the largest, not probably, it was the largest social media platform.
Uh-huh.
Now, today, they have TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat, which are like the powerhouses of the way in which they now encounter each other.
Wow.
And those are certainly areas that I know well, that I'm familiar with, but have not really spent a lot of time utilizing in my ministry as a priest. So
you're not dancing the liturgy on TikTok,
no.
Right?
Absolutely not. I don't even know. No. Campus Ministries does not have a TikTok. But encountering them, the students, with where they're at in their use of social media, I thought would be a lot more difficult than it has been. And I think one of the shifts or one of the changes that I've seen is that as the pandemic continues to recede and as the mandates loosen, and we have that sort of freedom to encounter as we have encountered before, it's been a really nice, easy transition into personal relationships. For so long, two and a half years of a pandemic, we were only strictly encountering each other online.
Online, yeah.
And now that we don't have to, it's nice to see that we aren't all the time. We are taking the time to encounter each other in person. So there is certainly some large shifts in the generation that I grew up in when I was in college and this one.
So it's interesting, though, social media is a big deal for young people and older people, too.
Sure.
But the pandemic, it seems like, is even young people, it's like, hey, I want some in-person time, right?
Yeah. Well, I think what the pandemic did really well is highlight those maybe pieces of ourselves that we like to keep hidden away.
Oh.
Our insecurities and our anxieties and our stresses. And in the pandemic, or because of the pandemic, we were forced to face them.
Yeah.
And we realized that we just maybe don't have the strength within ourselves to face them alone. And so now that that pandemic is receding, we kind of feel like urged or moved or ushered into maybe just forming better, healthier relationships with each other so that when faced again,
right,
with the reality of our stresses and our anxieties, we don't have to face them alone.
Right.
So, yes, I would say that social media today plays a much, much more integrated, deeper role in their lives,
uh-huh,
and in like my ministry to them. There are some things that remain the same, and that is the beauty and the importance of strong, authentic, interpersonal relationships.
Very
cool. I think the students see that. I know they see that.
And that's sort of timeless, isn't it?
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly, yeah, right? It's the way in which Christ encountered his disciples and anyone he came across.
Oh, that's cool. So what matters most to the students? I mean, what do you see as being important to them? How do you reach out to them and encourage them to get involved in campus ministry?
What seems important to them? What do they care about the most? Maybe my short answer to that question is authenticity.
Mm.
They care about people who are authentic, especially like leaders who are authentic.
What does that mean exactly?
Show
me what
that
looks
like. One of the gifts that young people have is the ability to see through hypocrisy an inauthenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I am standing up and just kind of talking in church platitudes and whatnot without really having any sort of deep feeling or love or desire to encounter them, then they're not going to care at all what I have to say. And they shouldn't care what I have to say if that's the way in which I approach them in my ministry. And so that is something that they care deeply about, is leaders or people who are real and authentic and don't hide behind titles and power and authority, but are approachable and real and care about who they are.
And make time to listen to them?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean,
is that the most important thing of authenticity, is listening? No?
Maybe. I certainly wouldn't take it. I wouldn't remove it from that definition. However, maybe authenticity is, in a bigger way, knowing yourself, like me knowing myself, and not pretending to hold more authority than I have or more power than I have, and the authority or the power that I do have, holding it very humbly and very gently.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the church as a whole, we have seen what happens when we as priests do not hold that authority well. Abuse and clericalism abounds. And that's something that people despise, and they ought to. And so holding that authority gently and humbly and taking my ministry and using it or living it to encounter the student, to know who they are, know their name, and what they love and what they are passionate about, that is the mark of a good leader.
And that takes time.
Absolutely it does, right? So the second part of your question, like what do they want and how do we as campus ministry help them to encounter Christ and encounter service, that takes a lot of time. I don't know all of the student body. I don't know all of the faculty and staff, right? I've only been here 8 months. And so also recognizing my limitations and knowing that I need the space and the time to get to know or relearn the culture of St. Ambrose and how our mission permeates just all of the facets of the university, that takes time. Like learning what the students want and what they are passionate about and what makes them tick, that takes even more time, right? Because you have to get to know them first, and they have to learn that they can trust you if they want to trust you. So
so it isn't just one-on-one encounters either, is it? I mean, you do. How else do you get to know them? Through service projects or
sure.
through
So for example, a good example, 2 weeks ago over spring break,
mm-hmm.
I journeyed with a group of students down to Memphis, Tennessee
mm-hmm.
for a service trip with Living Lands and Waters, where we spent the week cleaning up the trash along the Mississippi River down there. And so, yes, while I certainly had you know, one-on-one conversations with the students down there. It was our collective work of service that really solidified this bond rooted in something other than ourselves, like a common mission, common goal, to work to better God's creation. And they were students that, I mean, some of them I know from their time in campus ministry already, but some of the students I had never met before, ever. They aren't involved actively in campus ministry. So it was also a really great time to encounter, get to know students outside of the context of the church or Christ the King Chapel here on campus. And serving together, working together, toiling together, there's something beautiful, and the church has so much to say about it, something beautiful about the theology of work.
And did you have any glitches? Because it seems to me theology also involves when things get really messed up or messy, or you know, like you get frustrated, or it's like, it's too cold, or I don't like the food. Or...
Certainly, right? Because it was hard work. It wasn't like what I do every day when I have to sit in my office and answer emails and do, you know, pithy administrative work, which is the worst thing, right? Yeah. And so like being able to get out and do hard labor, it was hard, but it was so worth it. I mean, what a great experience of community, and what a great experience of like integrated, well-integrated Catholic social teaching.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Did you find any good finds in the river there?
Tons. There was so much
crap. Right?
There was so much junk. So much toys and lighters and styrofoam cups and fridges and tires. You name it, it was there.
You found it. Wow. So how do you reach out to students to encourage their participation? I mean, you don't just walk around and knock on students' doors and say, hey, come to campus ministry, come to Mass. What are the things you do to draw them in?
I think it's less about me and what I do, and more about us, like as a campus ministry staff, encouraging and journeying with those students who are around us already.
Mm-hmm.
One of the gifts of St. Ambrose Campus Ministry is that we have what we call our peer campus ministers.
Oh, that's right.
And they're students who live in just the various dorms here on campus. Mm-hmm. And they are like our campus ministry every day, hands and feet.
Oh, that's cool.
In the lives of the students. They're their peers, right? And so instead of like me doing all of the like work or encountering and bringing people in, right? Now it's a we, like we get to encounter together and we get to invite.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So how do you help St. Ambrose students discover and experience their own joy through faith formation? What draws in students? Service activities, retreats, one-on-one, small group conversations, guidance. Is it the peer ministers or is it something else?
Maybe all of those things.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we have to learn and adapt to each and every single person, right? So each of us are our own beings and with our own passions and our own interests and our own ways of loving and encountering. And so it just really depends on what people, our students, want. I think one of the things that the church does well is like create programs, like kind of like neatly boxed and presented programs, faith formation programs, right? Religious education programs. And those things like may very well work in different circumstances. But the trap that we often fall into is that we use them sort of like a blanket, like a security blanket.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel because this faith formation program or blah, blah, blah has already been created by the church. I think it's a good idea in theory. It's just that it doesn't work at all in reality because you're just not going to capture people's imagination and attention. And a boxed program isn't an encounter.
Right.
So really spending the time getting to know what the students want. I mean, one of the realities that I just kind of have been thinking about and praying over is that I am, while chaplain of St. Ambrose University, I am wholly aware that I am coming onto the students' property.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they live here.
Yeah.
This is their whole life. And I am merely coming from my house and, like, coming onto their campus for a short period of time.
Right.
And so me coming to their house, I am – it's just a much more humbling way of looking at, like, my reality of ministry. That as I am a guest – in their lives, then it's my duty to learn who they are and what drives them and what they love to do and what they hate to do.
Uh-huh.
And what scares them, like what fears do they hold in their hearts, what so, motivates them.
So tell us, what are some of those things? What have you learned in this 8 months? About-
sure. What do we fear? I think we fear... some of the things that I've witnessed along the past 8 months maybe is a general fear of failure.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a lot of pressure on our young people today to do things well and perfect the first time.
Yeah.
And that's just like such an unfair thing to put on them.
Yeah.
An unfair expectation to place on them. Because in our failure, we learn who we are. And we learn how to do things better
and how
more
to be,
whole.
And how to be humble, maybe.
Yes, and how to grow, right? So one of the beauties of like the church's theology is that she declares that the journey towards heaven is just as important as reaching heaven.
Ah, good point.
And so like the journey of exploration of who I am, of what I love, of the passions that I hold and that I want to cultivate, like that will inevitably bring about failure. And I wish that the students knew that that was okay, that they can fail and nobody will love them less. And we will still be here to encourage and cheer them on in whatever way we can and whatever way they need. So that's one example of like their fears. One example of the things that really kind of drive them is something that St. Ambrose has always had as an integrated piece of their mission, and that is service.
Right. Yep.
St. Ambrose, you know, part and parcel of their identity as a Catholic university has always been the service to our community, whether that's local or wider, right? And so one of the things that we have just really seen in campus ministry, but also just through the various other groups and programs that exist on campus, is this growing involvement in the service to our community here in Davenport and the Quad Cities and internationally. Like, the students care about the environment. They care about the war in Ukraine. They care about starving children. They care about all of these injustices that exist locally and internationally. And it's such a I don't know, edifying and challenging thing for my own ministry, right? Like,
yeah,
their deep, deep care for humanity.
So how do you tap into that? Is that in your homilies? Is it in your, in how you approach them and tapping into their faith? I mean, how does that integrate with their relationship with Christ?
I think yes and yes, right? Like, yes, tapping into like that drive, that passion in the way in which we approach the celebration of Mass, the prayers that we choose to pray during Mass, mm-hmm. the Eucharistic prayer options, the homilies that I craft, right, explicitly for them. But also outside of the context of the liturgy, right? If the liturgy does anything for us, it leads us, right? The Eucharist leads us forth.
Right.
Go out into the world, right? So it leads us forth to be Eucharist in the world. And so this passion or this drive from the students or that the students possess allows us in campus ministry and different like areas of the administration to like offer the opportunities that the students want and
okay.
need and desire to be challenged in that service, right? To grow, to...
Can you give some examples of that then?
Sure. So like our spring break service trips, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we had one go down to Memphis, and that was with Living Lands and Waters to do like manual labor.
Right.
Then we had another one go over to Kansas City and work with the homeless population.
Oh, cool.
And just like our brothers and sisters who live in poverty down there, to encounter them not as missionaries, but
right.
as friends.
Right.
Which
yeah.
is just... So beautiful. It's such a beautiful ministry down there. In addition to that, though, is like our civil rights marches that we have.
Okay.
Or maybe like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, when we had our march in solidarity with
Ukraine.
Our brothers and sisters in
right.
Ukraine. So all of these just different areas of the university allow for students to take ownership.
Mm-hmm.
They can plan them, right? They have right. the ability. We give them the resources. They can plan their own march, their own service opportunity for their fellow students.
So how do you keep students? So, I mean, I keep coming back to this because we keep hearing about how young people aren't really interested in institutional church or they're not interested in... liturgy maybe. I don't mm-hmm. know for sure. So how do you keep students engaged in the Catholic faith when there are so many other things to competing for their attention in the community at large? How do you make faith relevant in this day and age?
I mean, yeah, it's true. The greater population is anti-institution.
Yeah.
Anti-hierarchy, anti-patriarchy. Mm-hmm. So perhaps my answer will start with listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I am eternally grateful for the Holy Father for instituting the Synod on Synodality.
Oh, good.
For that purpose,
okay.
right?
To yeah.
like hear what the students have to say about that, their anti-institution, right? So over the past, I don't know, four months, probably this year, Dr. Amy Novak, our president, and her administration and us in campus ministry hosted numerous synod conversations.
Uh-huh.
She had them with all of the various groups on campus, PRISM, Black Student Union, student government. We hosted like larger ones for our faculty and staff.
Uh-huh.
She hosted a couple for like our larger student body. And so now we have 34 pages of synod conversations.
Wow.
That we're gonna meet with her about the week after Easter, right? Uh-huh. To really dig deep and delve into what our students, our staff, our faculty have to say about what makes their heart and what breaks their heart about the church, to better answer this question. Like, how do we approach people, like, as an institutional church?
Yeah.
How do we approach our students? And we cannot answer that question if we do not know what they're thinking and
right.
how they're feeling. And so I'm very grateful for the Holy Father for bringing that.
Have you been surprised by any of the responses to what breaks my heart, what fills my heart? Or what surprised you most, or what?
I think what surprised me most was that everyone, whether they were Catholic or atheist,
uh-huh.
had something to share about what breaks their heart and what makes their heart about the Catholic Church.
Oh, that's cool.
It wasn't like a sort of maybe what you'd expect. It wasn't like a throwing of all of our grievances.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't. It was such a deeply spiritual, moving experience of conversation. Like, people allowed, our students, our faculty, our staff, allowed themselves to be vulnerable and answer those two questions really from their heart.
Wow.
So what makes their heart? Maybe the most common question that we saw was the embrace of community, that like a faith community can be such a like deeply rooted family experience. And I think that like really lends to like our reality of the pandemic, right? That which we yearn for the most is to be known. And I think we saw that a lot in that answer.
So they want more of a like maybe a small kind of a community that they feel rooted in, maybe?
Maybe. I think once we kind of delve deeper into what their answers are,
uh-huh.
I think maybe we'll be better equipped to answer
okay.
that question.
Okay.
I think in like the what breaks your heart,
yeah.
there was a lot of like exclusion, like the church's exclusion of people.
Uh-huh.
Our exclusivity. While at the same time we claim our inclusivity, right?
Right?
So like them not able to kind of see both of those and why the church says, oh, we're so inclusive, and then their lived reality is, wow, you are so exclusive. And fair enough, right? If that's the way that they are experiencing the institutional church, totally fair. And of course, I would say that I wouldn't be surprised that they're rejecting it, right? If that's their experience, that we are so exclusive that there's no home for them.
Don't you think part of it has to do with culture, the idea that we're in the world and of the world? I mean, how do we reconcile the idea that, you know, culture changes.
Mm-hmm.
The church changes with the times as needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so how do you mesh the, the ephemeral with the eternal, maybe?
I think that God has already done that.
Okay.
I think God has already united heaven and earth together,
okay.
right? Knit them together, like as his cross pierced the earth and his blood flowed right into that hole. the two become intimately wedded together. And I'm always hesitant. It's one of my pet peeves of the institutional church, the Catholic Church, that she is quick to blame the
culture,
for problems,
or
people not coming to church anymore.
I got it.
She looks out at the world and she says, y'all are to blame, right? Society is to blame. Culture is to blame. So she points her finger out instead of pointing her finger in and beginning like, okay, so if this is the reality that we're living in, right, this is the culture that we're in the midst of, then how can we better equip ourselves to encounter people where they're at?
Where they're at, yeah.
Right? Like Jesus, taking our lead from Jesus' example of encountering the woman at the well, like how can we, given the circumstances, begin to encounter people with where they are? Not saying, look at all these terrible things, the culture is so bad, spewing whatever we want to say, and then never really taking the time to understand the culture, never understand where people are coming from, never understand why we got here, never understand like what people love about the culture and what people love about the church. So again, going back to the synod, I'm appreciative that like we get to start with us, right? Like we're starting with us. We're not starting with the culture here in the synod. We're starting with the church. And we're asking people what their experience of church is, given where exactly where they're at, right? We get to meet them exactly where they're at, and they get to share with us from exactly where they are. We're not asking them to change or do anything. We're just listening.
Just listening. And you have to take it from there.
Yeah. And then, I mean, that's probably the hard part, right?
Right. I mean, there's tough issues like LGBTQ.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's a big one for people. And the church is really having a struggle with that.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed. So our next step, which will be the hardest step, is now what?
Yeah, now what?
Like now what? What do we do? Do we do anything? But I think if Bishop Zinkula has taught me anything in my priesthood, it is a radical openness that the Spirit is alive and well. And the Spirit will direct us exactly where we ought to be. So,
a big step. A lot of prayer involved in that, isn't it?
So much prayer, yeah. And a lot of humility, again.
Wow. So, I just have a couple other quick questions.
Sure,
can I run by you? So, I'm wondering, how are students responding? I know I come back to this again, but how are they responding to coming to liturgy? I mean, a liturgy is important. You need those individual encounters and being out of the church, but you also need community, right?
Correct.
And within the church.
Correct.
Right? So how do you encourage that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And I think right now we're in the midst of trying to figure out how.
Yeah.
Right? Because like now that we're like hopefully post-pandemic, we can sing again.
Yeah.
We can celebrate Mass without our masks on, right? We can embrace each other.
Yeah.
We can, right, offer each other the sign of peace. We can bring back the chalice.
Yeah.
Right? Like all of these things that have been kind of taken away from us for 2 years.
Yeah.
We've fallen into some bad habits when it comes to the liturgy.
Yeah.
Not coming being like the biggest one probably, right? Like not participating being the second one. And I think that's maybe the one I see the most here on campus is like now we can sing.
Right.
So open your mouths
and
start
singing.
Right? So like when we were able to take our masks off for the first time and celebrate Mass together, I was just kind of slapped with that reality that look at all these people who just are used to not participating actively
right.
now.
Right.
So I think it's just going to take a lot of time. I mean, we haven't had like a robust normal liturgy in 2 years.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to take a lot of time to reclaim the beauty and the fullness
okay.
of the church's liturgy. And hopefully, right, hopefully we're working hard and to get there. But I think also people, students who are Catholic, and even now, like this year particularly, even those who are not Catholic, have been coming and celebrating really well.
Oh, that's cool.
With us. There's something about Mass on a college campus that is just so different from Mass in a parish. And if you've ever been to a college campus Mass, it's just, you know it, right? There's something just like in the air, right?
Young it's more people. Intimate.
There's, yeah, and there's young people leading young people.
Exactly. Well, and I did attend Mass in college at a Newman Center, but that was like in the ancient days. So
yeah, sure.
But we were young then.
Yeah. But it's like really such an amazing experience to like to allow them to have control over
yes.
the liturgy that they yeah. participate yeah.
Oh,
in.
Oh, that's a good point.
And so I think that's also another aspect of this, right? So allowing, giving the students the tools that they need
yes.
to make the liturgy theirs. Like
yes.
for
yes.
them to embrace the liturgy, not as mine as the priest, but
right.
as theirs, right? As a community. Like they are actively participating in this liturgy that is us together.
Yeah.
So really now that we have the opportunity post-pandemic, really equipping them with the tools to make it their own.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's terrific. I love it. Last question. How do you recharge your spiritual battery?
I'm thankful for a house that's a block and a half away from campus.
Uh-huh.
Because I need, like as an introvert, I need some space and some silence to recharge and recuperate. And that isn't to say, like, I absolutely love my time
right.
during the day and late at night, whenever the students need us. I love my time with them, but the way in which I spiritually recharge is complete aloneness, which
oh,
I totally embrace, which I love. Aloneness, isolation, quiet, nothingness. Nothingness.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, I've enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, Barb.
You'll come back, right?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course, yeah, absolutely. You come to campus, so.
That's right.
Okay. Right across the bargain
line. I'm here. Well, thank you again.
And thank you, Barb. Appreciate it.
We'll see you next time.
Sounds good.